First Baptist Church of Redmond, June 20th, 2021, Ecclesiastes chapter 4. One will lift up his companion.
And join me in reading Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 10. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. You may be seated.
God will lift up ones that need support. I've titled the sermon, One Will Lift Up His Companion, because it's appropriate, and I'm preaching the whole fourth chapter, but I'll hit the highlights. Over the course of several months, Peter Skillman, that's his picture, conducted a study pitting the elite of university students against average kindergartners. Groups of four built structures using 20 pieces of spaghetti. When we were having youth, we done that, yes? You take spaghetti noodles and only connect them to marshmallows and see how high you can build them. Groups of four built structures using 20 pieces of spaghetti, 1 yard of tape, 1 yard of string, and only one marshmallow. The only rule there was the marshmallow had to end up on the top, as the graphic says. Business students begin by diagnosing the task, formulating a solution, and assigning roles. The kindergartners, by contrast, got right to work, trying, failing, and trying again. Author Daniel Coyle explains the outcome. We presume skilled individuals will combine, produce a skilled performance. But this assumption was totally incorrect. In dozens of trials, the kindergartners built structures that averaged 26 inches tall, while the business school students built structures that averaged less than 10 inches. We have a quote. We see smart, experienced business school students, and we find it difficult to imagine they would combine to produce a poor performance. We see unsophisticated, inexperienced kindergartners, and we find it difficult to imagine that they would combine to produce a skillful performance. Individual skills are not what matters. What matters is the interaction. The kindergartners succeed not because they are smarter, but because they work together in a smarter way. They're tapping into a simple and powerful method which a group of ordinary people can create a performance far beyond the sum of their parts. Ecclesiastes is similar to the book of Proverbs. If they have the same author, they have slightly different methods, but Ecclesiastes resembles the book of Proverbs with short epigrams dealing with the various aspects of life. Between chapter 4, verse 1, we're studying that section, and chapter 10, verse 20. I'd like to give an overview of chapter 4 to summarize it and explain it quickly. We see the existence of unrelieved oppression in the first three verses. We see unsatisfied jealousy The jealousy continuing in verses 4 through 6. We find unmitigated loneliness. Solomon is lonely in chapter 4, verses 7 through 12. And it illustrates the uncertainty of political power and popularity in verses 13 through 16. Solomon, I say, sees this with sunglasses on. He's ignoring God's presence. Again, Solomon wrote this book as I think he gave his testimony of his distance from God. He was distant from God when he wrote this book, and the point of it was to illustrate life under the sun is meaningless without God's presence. Then I looked again at all the acts of oppression which were being done under the sun, and behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and that they had no one to comfort them. And power was on the side of their oppressors, but they had no one to comfort them. Solomon says he has observed the problems firsthand. He's an eyewitness of the problems. Oppression is the word Solomon uses to describe tears that his father David would have suffered at Saul's hand. He said that the oppressed people feel hopeless and helpless because that had no one to comfort them. They had no one to comfort them. They had no hope. And hope is so important. You can talk to us later, but Barbara gave an important lesson on hope and faith and doing what you're supposed to do. And she was rewarded for it. Power is what we see is in the hand of the oppressors. They have all the power. We think they have all the power. Under the sun, there is found no relief. So I congratulated the dead who are already dead, more than the living who are still living. But better off than both of them is the one who has never existed, who has never seen the evil activity that is done under the sun. Without God, sorrow overwhelms the soul. What kinds of things, audience participation part of the show, what kinds of things can happen to you that has a bad outcome? What are you afraid of? Losing loved ones. What?
Getting sick.
Earthquake. Yes, great minds think the same. Car accident. All kinds of things can you make you afraid. And ultimately, I think there's one thing that you fear the most. It varies with different people, but I think there's one thing that you fear the most and you dread thinking about it. Solomon is honest. It leads to suicidal longings. Suicide is primarily the purveyance of the sad, lonely, and isolated. I've known people who have committed suicide successfully, and I won't say more. In my family, I've known people who have unsuccessfully tried to commit suicide. The root on all these cases, I think, is despair, hopelessness. This horizontal way to look at life, not the vertical, but the horizontal, only leads to despair. Ancient philosophers, Herodotus, Sophocles, and Cicero, didn't have any answer to hopelessness. They think that suicide is a good solution if you're hopeless. Solomon, interestingly enough, does not attempt to offer a solution either, because he has forgotten to hope in God for comfort. Wisdom gone to seed. He was the wisest man that ever lived, but he forgot God. He forgot God's discipline. He forgot God's edicts willingly. So he ends up in despair. I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is the result of rivalry between a person and his neighbor. This too is futility and striving after wind. Behind it all, Solomon sees life as a scramble resulting in rivalry. Rivalry never, introduces our theme, rivalry never results in companionship and closeness. He sees it stemming from futility. It means, rivalry means, to envy one's neighbor rather than envy from one's neighbor. There's a subtle difference. If you envy your neighbor, you're jealous, you're anxious, and you're frustrated because you're not the top dog. By the way, it's activated by hate from us. He's describing carnal selfishness. Indeed, his eyes were not satisfied with riches. He's describing the rat in the rat race. You can feel like it, but you'll never come out ahead. You see, as you climb the ladder higher in the so-called area of success, you get increasingly lonely and have fewer friends when you're living only to get ahead. And you have less accountability too. You have fewer people that you listen to. God is one of the voices, and it's, trust me, it's easy to ignore God when you want to. The executive type is so driven by the need of success that he does not know when to stop. Even if he has no dependents, the verse says he had no family, he had no children, he had no offspring, but he was characterized by a driven perspective. If he has no dependents, he still is driven by rivalry, and he still feels empty. Did you catch that story? Japan appoints a minister of loneliness to combat COVID-19 related suicide. Japan has appointed a minister of loneliness to try to reduce loneliness and social isolations. During the month of October last year, more people, Japanese people, died from suicide than had died from COVID-19 in all of 2020. There were 2,153 suicide deaths that month, and 1,765 total virus deaths up to the end of October, according to the National Police Agency of Japan. Studies show that the loneliness has been linked to a higher risk of health issues like heart disease, dementia, and eating disorders. People have worked to solve loneliness in a various number of ways. One company designed a robot to hold someone's hand when they're lonely. One man charges people simply to sit with them and do nothing except keep them company. Solomon invites the thought, I know somebody like that. We all know people who are despondent, prone to depression, prone to negative thoughts. You probably know somebody. The point is, you have to trust them with your life. You have to share a little bit of your life with them and get them to share part of their life with you. Solomon identifies three examples of solitary existence in contrast to companionship to make a point. For if either of them falls, but how can one be warm alone? Two can resist them. Two. He is emphasizing a group as small as two can make a difference. It's possible that all three might arise from the experience of traveling in the ancient Near East. I see the setting right now. The first might speak of falling into a pit. You can be helped. The second might talk of trying to keep warm outdoors. It's very... You can't imagine it, but it's very cold in the desert. Desert winds might howl. It can freeze in the desert and bake in the sunshine. But you might struggle to keep warm in the desert and not freeze to death while it's 90 degrees Fahrenheit in the daytime. The third might refer to robbers along the road. It's difficult to struggle by yourself, but if you have someone else to make noise, to show them you're not afraid, it might save your life. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. A helper, a comforter, and a defender might all apply to many life settings. A tow rope of three strands cannot be cut. You help me, and I will help you. That's a quote from the author of the Epic of Gilgamesh to his friend Enkidu. That's an old Middle Eastern phrase, a cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. It's a common metaphor in ancient stories. A poor yet wise youth is better than an old and foolish king who can no longer know how to receive instruction, for he has come out of prison to become king, even though he was born poor in his kingdom. This story is proverbial. Many people have looked at it and tried to give meaning to the story, but we think it's fictional. We cannot identify who this is talking about. But the important thing is the king proves to be foolish when he no longer knows how to receive instruction. Instruction can be seen as admonition or a warning. Essentially, he doesn't listen to anybody. In essence, the aged king was acting as a loner. He refused to listen to his counselors. Proverbs identifies wise counsel as characteristics of the best plans or decisions. Many times, many verses. I have seen all those living under the sun move him to the side of the second youth who replaces him. In one sense, Solomon, Jeroboam, and Rehoboam. It describes losing the kingdom because Solomon's son was not wise and he fomented a revolt against the kingdom of God, which broke into the northern 10 tribes and the southern 2 tribes. It was recorded in 1 Kings 11. In brief, wisdom, age, power, youth, and popularity all fail to guarantee success for us. The masses willingly support revolution because they cannot believe that the fault lies with them. In politics, culture, and religion, you cannot understand your guilt. We limit the possibility of reform because the more control the reformer has, the more it tends to tyranny. Yes? Yes. Ideal social justice must await the righteous one himself. God will change all things. The never-ending months of the coronavirus pandemic in 2020 and 21 has forced many men to recognize the superficiality of their friendships and see the need for something more substantial. Time with the guys was normally spent talking football and, well, numerous other shallow discourses. Family, personal relationships, how they were really doing, was rarely, if ever, brought up in discussion. Men have always avoided seeing, men always have avoided seeming needy and vulnerable. It is not the manly thing to do. Numerous studies have shown that the only emotional intimacy with many men is the women in their lives. Professor Jeffrey Grief recently authored a book about male friendships. Male friendships are often quote-unquote shoulder-to-shoulder interactions, such as watching sports or playing video games, while women's interactions are more face-to-face, such as grabbing a coffee. Because of this, many men have probably had a harder time than women figuring out how to adapt their friendships in a pandemic, keeping them apart. The Washington Post recently argued, dozens of men shared stories about Zoom poker games, neighborhood dad what's up chains, and fantasy football leagues, while casual chats about sports and politics have suddenly led to deep and uncomfortable conversations. About the struggles of virtual schooling, family illness, breakups, birth, wedding postponements, and job losses, some men have seen their friendships have begun to look more like their wives and girlfriends have. For the first time in their lives, they're going on walks with male friends just to catch up. They're FaceTiming old college friends and checking in on neighbors, not only to talk about NBA draft picks or their children's soccer schedule, but they're asked how they're doing. We need connection. We need friendships. And dads especially are feeling isolated. The only solution is to look at God.